Hey, this is Kevin, and before we get into the podcast, obviously one thing I wanted to address is the terrible disaster in Japan and the Pacific with the tsunami. I don't ask a lot from you guys, and I really wanted to see if we can pull the FitCast audience together to do something really good right now. And I'm going to ask you to go and try to help in some way, whether it be donating a couple dollars or whatever it may be. The easiest way to do this is to go to the American Red Cross website. It's very simple. You can just go to Google and search for the Red Cross. On the front page, you'll see a link and an image and how you can donate to the relief effort. And I mean, you can even do it on your phone. That might be the easiest way to do it. You can literally do it through a text message. If you, again, take your phone and search for the Red Cross, and you can click right on a link that will allow you to donate $10 through text message. So, again, you know, I want you to take a second and, you know, I'm sure a lot of you have already helped out in one form or another. But if you can go to the Red Cross or any other relief effort where you can, you know, donate some money to help out the people that have been affected and the families that have been affected by this disaster. Again, you know, whether it be $5, $10, or $100, you know, anything is going to help. So again, I don't want to, you know, make a huge downer before we get into the podcast, but I feel like this is something we should do. If you can, if you're in the position to help out, we would really appreciate if you could. So thank you. And you know, our hearts go out to all the, people and the families that have been affected, by this disaster. And that's about it. Let's get into the podcast. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 208. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week is Dr. Jonathan Bass. How are you doing, John?
Feeling so fly like a G6 player.
Great. And it looks like we have good internet connection, which is also
awesome.
A big plus this week.
Awesome sauce.
Yep, we're going to get right into it. And as you can probably tell from the title of this show, we're going to be going with a format that we did for the fat loss program design and do program design for strength. No real FitCast news this week, but and we're not going to get into anything because I don't think this is really the place for it. But obviously, our hearts go out to everyone who's been affected by the tsunami and the earthquake out in Japan and the surrounding areas. So, you know, we hope
Definitely. Hope
you and your family are safe. And, you know, please just keep in mind over the next, you know, the coming days and weeks, if you see an opportunity to help out, you know, through donations or whatnot, Please do what you can, because this is obviously a terrible event, and you know, we just get to help people as much as we can to help move on. Yeah, absolutely, very scary.
Yeah. Some of those images are amazing, like cars just floating down the street and buildings, just amazing.
Yeah, it's, you know, how did you get your coverage, John? Did you just kind of go online?
No news.
Oh, you guys.
Yeah. I get, you know, actually I get CNN, but it doesn't come in well, but MSNBC, CNBC, a couple local newscasts that are in English and stuff like that. I get a lot of news, actually.
Good. I'd hear it. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to, you know, have a, you know, a jam-packed episode where we're going to be hopefully not going all over the place. We believe that we have a decent outline for where we're going to go with this. And one thing I will say before we get started is we will be taking any questions that you have from this episode. We'll address those next week, and you can send those to questions at thefitcast.com. Make sure to put in you know, a subject line that makes sense for your topic. And please, like I mentioned last week, try to keep it not super long. If you need us to elaborate on something, we can do that. But we probably aren't going to answer any very personal questions. Try to keep them generalized to a certain extent. And we already talked about warm-ups for the most part in the fat loss episode. So use what you had in there in terms of the foam rolling, the dynamic warm-up and stuff. But, you know, where I would leave from that is going into ballistics, which, you know, med ball work. So that's the first thing I would like to talk about. And unfortunately, not all of our audience is going to have, like, a nice wall where they train to do med ball work. But you know, I was very fortunate to obviously intern with Eric Cressy and now work at Mike Boyle's, where lots of med ball work is done. And you know, the importance of ballistics might not be seen initially, but when you think about it, it is very important. And we actually had Nick Tuminello come in a couple months ago and also talk about some med ball work and some rotary training that he's doing. I'm not going to talk about that too much. We're going to keep it general in some sense, so we can try to reach the, you know, the as much of you guys as possible. And you know, we'll just see how it goes. Like I said, if you have any questions, we will talk about them next week. But for the med ball work, there's lots of stuff that you can do in terms of things that are as simple as chest pass, overhead slams to the ground, overhead throws towards the wall, single arm shot puts, hip tosses, or or side tosses, whichever you'd like to call them. Due to this not being a video show, we can't show you that stuff, but you can find lots of videos for it on Eric Cressy's YouTube. There's lots of it, and obviously, you know, on Body by Boyle online, we have videos of all these exercises, so that we use at Mike Boyle's. So you can check a lot of that stuff out there too. But in terms of programming and what I like to use with my specific clients, like I have some men that are specifically training for strength, or when I work with, I have some personal training clients that are athletes. One specifically is a baseball player. And for him, we end up doing a lot of the more advanced med ball work that you would see done at Eric Cressy's in terms of the my mind's blanking for a second, but we will do crow hops and more like what would be called like hot feet shot puts. But again, it's going to be really hard to describe a lot of this stuff. But I think everyone should have some general med ball work in their program, just in terms of developing power. Focus on speed. Even go with a med ball that might be a little bit lighter than you think you would use, just to focus on velocity. And I think that's where I will leave the exercise part of it. In terms of the programming, go anywhere between 8 and 15 reps, especially with overhead slams. You can go towards that 15 rep range. If it was something that would be like a single arm movement, I might go up into the 8 rep range. I probably wouldn't go too much higher than that. I mean, then you just get into strict, you know, repetition where, you know, maybe that time can be used better somewhere else. But, you know, overhead slams and chest passes, you can go up into that 15 range. But especially the chest passes, using those before a bench workout can be very effective, just to getting warmed up and just, you know, focusing on, if you want to call it, you know, activating fast twitch muscle fibers. You can say that too. However you want to generalize it, we're not going to argue about semantics here. It's not, you know, worth our time. But I mean, John, do you have a history, you know, doing med ball work with clients? Did you have any of that, you know, that available at your facilities?
Yeah, at the RU gym, we did that a lot, obviously with the teams. And I do exactly right. I mean, I think it's a good – I like it especially for athletes because they need to be explosive. They need to be reactive. And so when you're working with med ball, you know, ballistic med ball throws and things like that, I feel that it really gets you into a nice conditioning rhythm that that you wouldn't so easily get otherwise. And there is the reactive time because if you've there's certain med ball exercises where you don't catch the return. There are others that you do, and I like that because it makes that athlete have to respond to stuff, not just cause movement, but respond to movement. How does the ball, you know, bounce off the wall or bounce off the floor, and they have to respond to that. So it's kind of like explosive work with a purpose, I kind of feel. So they can be used for anyone. It doesn't have to be just athletes, but I certainly like them for athletic populations. And then depending on what kind of athletes you're talking about, baseball, tennis, mixed martial arts and throws, things like that, you're training a specific movement, and you can really be creative with what you're doing and get some good specific kinds of movements.
I'm going to apologize for John's connection. He is in an undisclosed location. Yeah, it's not very good.
Damn it.
That's okay.
That sucks.
It could be me, but I doubt it.
Right.
Well, I'm in perfect. America.
That's true.
Even though we don't have very good internet.
So I sound like a Cylon?
No, it's just cutting in and out a little bit, but I can get the gist of what you're saying, so I think everyone else will be okay.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, well.
Well, it's good enough, John.
thanks.
No, you brought up a good point, something that I missed. Being able to react to the rebound of the ball coming off the wall, especially when you're doing, you know, hip tosses. If you're using something that's not a Dynamax ball, but that is more of a rubber ball that will really come back at you, and you get to basically work on the eccentric aspect of the movement to slow the ball down. And I really do like, you know, that aspect of it as well. And when you're talking about, eventually down the road, we'll get Eric back on to talk about this some more. But in terms of the load or the stress that you're putting on the shoulder in terms of what you get out of it, makes it highly a highly valuable part of programming for overhead athletes, be it baseball, volleyball, whatever sport you want to choose. So yeah, that's med ball training again. You know, we're going to try to get through as much of this as possible. We can't go too in depth, but hopefully you can get some general ideas out of this. And once we leave the med ball work, we're not going to talk about plyometrics. We're not going to talk about speed training because I think that's a different discussion altogether. If we want to talk about speed training and vert training down the road, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about specifically programming for strength, if you want to call it, more like elite FTS type strength and, you know, less of the athletic strength. But next would be dynamic work that you're going to put into your programming. And this would be anything that is done for speed. So if you want to take a barbell bench and you want to work doing some speed reps, which would be anywhere between 40% and anywhere upwards of maybe 65% of your one rep max that you might be doing for 3 to 5 reps, making sure that you're keeping the bar speed high and keeping in mind that these reps and these sets, this work is not necessarily, you know, to pile the weight on the bar. It's to just work on speed. And that's something that I think a lot of people forget in their programming. And they tend to just, you know, put 225 on the bar and they go 2 seconds down, 1 second up. I think that can tend to be an issue that, or something that people neglect when it comes to programming, and they think it can be a waste of time.
Yeah, no, it is vital, in my opinion, for strength training. And Kev, if I sound like crap, just tell me to shut up.
I will.
Because I don't know. Yeah. It's speed is absolutely vital for strength training of any type. It's strength is a component, a direct component of speed, and the faster that you can move the bar, the more power that you can put into the bar whenever you're lifting and whatever it is. If you're an athlete, you're guaranteed you need to use it. And even if you're a strength athlete, you can still utilize those qualities in your lifting. And it's not a mistake that powerlifters, Olympic weightlifters, strongmen, you know, any type of strength athlete that you look into, that you look at, is going to be using speed training as part of their training. There's just no, it's not a mistake.
Yeah, and I think it is something that even beginners can find very beneficial. So
right, and I think what happens is what people lose it on speed training because they don't go far enough into their speed training to actually understand the difference. Because when you begin in speed training, you won't be moving very quickly. You'll move fast, but you won't be explosive. It's a quality to be learned, just like anything else. And I think what happens is people try it a few times and they either maybe they didn't get good a good explanation of what to experience and what to look for, or they're just, you know, they're doing it on their own, so they have no idea what to look for, and they just give up too quickly. And when you understand, the best piece of advice that I ever got from an Olympic weightlifter when I was first learning like how to, you know, perform cleans and snatches, he said, attack the bar. Just attack the bar. When you catch the clean, don't just catch it, attack it. Throw yourself into the bar. Same thing with the snatch. And that made such a huge difference in what I was trying to accomplish when I did speed training. And it's the same thing if you're a powerlifter and you're not using, you know, the Olympic lifts necessarily, you still attack the bar. You put all of your force and effort into the bar, and it doesn't stop once you begin moving. It stops when the bar stops moving. So you have to look for that explosive quality, not just quick, but violent explosion. And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and just as I remember, I want to quickly tell John that I did get a response from Mike about the why athletes catch the clean.
Okay, cool.
You can check it out on Body by Boy Online this week.
Well, I believe that I will then.
John's a member. Excellent.
I am.
Dropping it.
Drop it like it's hot.
Sorry for all the plugging this week, but one of the simplest ways that I've seen it implemented, and I believe this was in when I was going through Dave Tate's bench manual, 2 years ago or so, what he does, or maybe I might be losing where I initially read this, but for dynamic effort stuff, for example, you know Monday you're going to do your speed bench day, and then on Thursday you're going to do your max effort day. So you can still get the best of both worlds, and you know, not completely tap out when it comes to the lifts. The same thing, you know, think about it in many of the lifts that you do and rotate it. You know, maybe 1 month you put in a speed bench, the next month you do a speed deadlift, and the next month you do, speed squat. Mix it up. And I almost kind of like to use it every, you know, once every 3 months, when I really need it, when I'm at a sticking point in my bench or in another lift, and I put in some speed work, and then I can kind of break through that plateau.
And it definitely does. I think that when people use speed work at first, like you said, they don't really see the benefit of it, but and yet your numbers are going up, but you don't feel it when you're doing the speed. You just don't see it, but it's almost like rep work. I mean, that's the way that I look at it. It's a very different type of activity than rep work, but it's the same way where people will use rep work as a complement to their primary lift. You know, they'll do some heavy lifting and then they'll bust out a high rep set just to, you know, blood flow and some muscle endurance or whatever the reason. I look at it the same way in concept, in theory. You're using the same lift done in a different style to complement the primary lift the way that you want to lift it. The nice thing about speed work is, though, is that when you're training for power or strength, it's directly related to that power. It's not something that kind of is an addition. It's a direct quality of that.
And I should have mentioned this a little bit before, but what we're going to be talking about right now for this first section is just concepts, and then we're going to really get into, you know, how to program in terms of sets and reps and total volume and all that stuff. I just wanted to get some concepts out at you because you know, depending on what you read or who you follow, you may or may not have heard of this stuff. The other major component that I want to talk about is variable resistance, and again, I think this is a vital component of programming, be it in a you know, an aspect. If you're, again, let's talk about your three main lifts, which are you're going to use this for. You're going to be your deadlift, your squat, and your bench. You might find some other places to put it. You know, push-ups, obviously, but I mean those mm-hmm. those types of movements. And
jump squats and
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can even do it in God, I'm blanking. I don't know why I'm having problems functioning today, but
well, you did take home the wrong dog, so
I did take home the wrong dog. Damn it.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
But that dog just jumped right in my car. He was like, he was whatever. So although
to be fair, Kevin, we are talking about something that you kind of know. It's not like we're discussing Aristotle's carburetor or something. I wouldn't know anything about that either.
So variable resistance, let's talk about a couple ways you can implement it. Chains, if you're talking about, benching with chains or deadlifting with chains, something that is going to be a little bit more accessible for the people out there are going to be bands. And we're talking about, you know, your jump stretch bands that you can pick up, perform better. Elite also has a line of bands that you can use. And they're literally rubber bands that you may have used before for band-resisted push-ups or X-band walks. Lots of uses for them. But what you're going to see is when, you know, when in these lifts, take for example, the bench, if you do a band resisted bench, you're going to have those bands attached to something on the ground. So at the top of the lift, you're going to have, the maximum load. At the bottom of the lift, where obviously the bar is closest to your chest, you're going to have less of a load. So if you tend to have problems finishing your bench, this is where you're going to get a lot of benefit from it. And again, this is something you don't want to do every single month. You want to kind of rotate it. You might want to put it in your programming once every 3 months, and you might just want to put it in for 2 out of the 4 weeks for that phase. It's not something you want to overuse. It's one of those things you want to keep in your bag of tricks when it comes to getting through some kind of plateau. The reverse of that is going to be the band assisted bench, where if you have a nice cage where you bench or bench inside of a or a platform with a nice cage. Basically, a cage is going to be, it's kind of like a squat rack, but it's, it surrounds you completely. You probably see it in most strength and conditioning facilities or college weight rooms. Not so much in the commercial setting, but you might, depending on your gym. If you go to a decent gym, like if you go to a Gold's Gym, they might have one. You'll kind of know it when you see it. In that case, you can attach the bands to the top of the rack, so you have a band assisted bench where you will be doing, loads where the weight is going to be heaviest at the top and it's going to be lightest towards your chest. But again, that is something that you can find to be pretty effective when you can throw 315 pounds on the bar if your max is like 265. and get some help that way as well. We did some of that at Cressy's, and I found it to be very effective. And at the same time, it's pretty brutal, and you will be very sore the day after. It ends up being a lot of volume. So that's for the bench. And again, you can use bands for that. You can use chains. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the deadlift and the squat. You can squat and deadlift to chains or bands. And I think you get the idea. Yeah, another thing I like to obviously use the the variable resistance work is, especially when it comes to my personal training clients, whether it be strength or that their goal is or just fat loss. I love band resisted and chain push-ups. Fantastic exercise. And again, if you have a personal training client, especially a male who, you know, it's Friday and, you know, he's going to the beach tomorrow, or it's Saturday morning and he's going to the beach later that day, and you want him, like, kind of have him going out the door with a pump, that will really do it. And again, it's one of those things that it can help you if you're stuck with a sticking point and your client can't bench, or you know, there's always so many reasons that you can do it. And even band resisted dumbbell bench, where you just literally put the band around your back and put your hands through the band and then grab your dumbbells and do it that way. There's so many ways that you can use variable resistance throughout the gym. You really just need to be creative. And obviously, John, we see this a lot with you know, clients that were helping to do chin-ups for the first time will throw a band around the chin-up bar, and that way we can actually get negative resistance, so we can help them, you know, finish their chin-up and do them.
Yep. Like you said, I think great way for body weight exercises to make them more challenging, great way to challenge traditional exercises that you're not, you know, where it's just you and the resistance. Now you can use bands, change, and that dynamic loading that it's just a new challenge and a new way to lift. They've been doing more research on things like that, but their new techniques are not as heavily researched as you know, traditional weightlifting is, but there's promising initial results, and it's definitely an interesting concept.
And let me see, where do we go from here? I wanted to quickly mention, like, band-resisted rollouts is something, a lot of this tends to be a little bit more advanced, but I love band-resisted rollouts. And also, a lot of people, you know, have talked to me about my band-resisted anti-rotation press. And again, I love the exercise because it obviously gets more difficult throughout the movement of the exercise. So you can really play around with it a lot. You can be very inventive. And if you have limited amounts of equipment, or if you train at home, you can get a ton of stuff done with bands. So we'll leave that there. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back, and we're going to continue to talk about programming for strength. All right, we're back. Hope you enjoyed that song from the
From somebody,
whatever I put in there.
I think you should put Like a G6.
Nope, I hate that song.
I love it. It's so bad, it's good.
No, I will put in Katy Perry's Firework. You can
like that song too.
I love that song. Check out Katy Perry's music. Download it on iTunes. Buy that stuff. Check out her YouTube page. Katy Perry is awesome. Her music is fantastic. And I'm serious about that. I think Katy Perry's Firework and you know, the Teenage Dream, great songs that literally, you know, make me sing to them in the car. Too much? Probably.
Yep. I love some of the worst music, and I know it's horrible, and I love it anyway. That's what happens when you work in a gym for like 10 years.
Dude, I heard was Lady Gaga when I worked at Boston Sports Club.
All the time.
Like Poker Face. My poker face.
Yep. Anyway, so the next one, we actually want to take a step back and talk more about the concept of strength training, because I think what we talk a lot about, you know, powerlifting or Olympic weightlifting, but there's all kinds of concepts of strength training. And when you first decide, okay, I want to get stronger, I mean, that's like every teenage guy, right? What do you want to get stronger. I want to get big. why? And you have to ask yourself why. To what use will you use this strength? Because we have all kinds of strength. We have powerlifters. We have strongmen. We have bodybuilders. We have CrossFitters. Every one of those guys is strong. Olympic weightlifters. Every one of those guys are strong. And every one of those guys are strong in different ways. And so you have to analyze yourself and decide what it is that you want to do with this strength and how you want to apply it, because that's going to make every bit of difference in how you train. And as an aside, there's a story that I have back when I used to roll, when I used to play with Russian grappling and jiu-jitsu and things like that. I was rolling with one of my roommates, actually, who was a judo player for years. And we were just, rolling and going through stuff. And he told me that I was one of the strongest guys that he had ever rolled with, which is crazy because I am not a strong guy. I'm going to say that right now. I'm not breaking records. I mean, I hold my own, but I'm not, I don't have a powerlifting background, never competed in Olympic weightlifting. I'm not moving that kind of weight. But apparently when we were on the floor and when we were going through technique training and having some free sparring, I was able to utilize that strength. And I think that that's exactly the point that I'm making. Sometimes it's not about how much you can deadlift or how much you can squat. It's how well you can utilize the strength that you have in the sport of your choosing. So when you look at how you want to generate your strength, think very carefully, because it's not just about being big on the big lifts unless that's what you want to do. Otherwise, those big lifts are just something that may help you to get that overall strength. If you look at a CrossFit athlete and they have these types of, these kind of all-around strongmen-like competitions, but they include endurance, they do include all kinds of different things, the goal is to be strong at everything. So it's not strong at two lifts like an Olympic weightlifter or three lifts like a powerlifter. So you may fall into that category. And I would argue that for most people that are just, go to the gym to exercise and be strong, they're probably more along those terms. You want to be strong at everything. You want to not be caught out there, needing strength and not having it, versus an athlete that is specific, a strength athlete that must get better at the clean and the jerk, or must get better at the bench press. So just an aside, I don't know that people think about that often enough, and I think they get caught up in the idea of how big can my squat be, how big can my bench press be. Let's be honest, everyone wants to know what you bench. But if it's not of use to you, that may not be a great way to train. So just putting that out there.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, we can get to the more fun stuff. I'm just kidding, John. It's all good.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, you can just say, I want to have a big bench. That's cool. But know that that's what you want. Know that there's no – if you're – I think that the idea is that, if you're a baseball player, having a monster bench may or may not actually help that. It may. Or may not, or it can be part of your training, but you've got to do, like we were talking before, the ballistic med ball exercises. And if you're a power pitcher, then the squats, the lunges, and the deadlifts are going to be more important to you because you have to get that leg drive. So there are all kinds of reasons for including exercises or not including them.
And, we're not going to get into this too much today, but keep in mind now that we're starting to get into the programming part, there is a difference between strength training and hypertrophy training. But obviously you do need to be strong to get big. But it is two different types of programming.
Closely related, but differently. Yeah. I mean, and like I said before, a bodybuilder is strong, but they're not going to be as strong as a power lifter unless they happen to exercise like that. And some of the guys do. And back in the day, the old school bodybuilders, they all used those big lifts and they lifted very heavy. So,
and also mobility is a lot more important for someone who's trying to get stronger than someone who's just trying to get big.
Right. And then you can, and a lot of times people, and I think it's fair enough to say, bodybuilding is the sport
of looks. It's non-functional hypertrophy in the sense of it being that they're not training for anything other than to be big. They may be athletic or they may not be. It won't affect their ability to put on muscle size specifically. And yet they're absolutely strong, there's no question. And they may or may not be as strong as some other strength athletes, but they're still very strong, and you could decide that that's the kind of strength you're looking for, and that's fine.
It's totally cool. Not that there's anything wrong with that Seinfeld reference.
No, it's totally nice.
Thanks. All right, so let's talk about exercise selection, because I think this is something that it gets a lot of discussion in articles and on forums, like, oh, what exercise should I do to increase this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we talked a little bit about it before, but start with your main building blocks. Start with your bench, deadlift, squat, and also, throw in chin-ups there. If you want to focus on athleticism, you're probably going to throw in some Olympic lifts too, specifically a clean or clean mm-hmm. and jerk or clean and press. But I believe, for the general population, the Olympic lifts are not something that you're going to want to waste your time with. And I'd say that as, if you're working with someone who is just purely looking to, get a big bench, a big deadlift, they don't really care about speed. I do think cleaning will make you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a lot of time and effort to, become a good cleaner. And we're not even talking about, focus on, proper form. If you are going to go into, overhead lifts as well, in terms of the Olympic lift section. So, I don't know, John, do you feel differently?
No, I mean, I do agree with that. I think that you need proper instruction. They're very technical lifts, very technical. And when you look at the overwhelming majority of people that use those lifts, they do them wrong. They haven't been trained properly. The old high school clean is the ugliest thing that I've ever seen in my life. So I agree with you. I think that for someone that is not involved in sport training and doesn't have proper instruction, maybe I'd go as far as like a high pull or something like that, but I don't think that I would be going into the actual specifics of like a clean and a jerk or a snatch. I think that you can use some of the accessory lifts that come along with Olympic lifts, but you don't necessarily have to do the Olympic lifts yourself. And I agree with you. I think that if you're an athlete, you definitely want to. But if you're just someone looking to get stronger, there are other ways around. You can still use a dynamic effort without having to use a full Olympic lift, unless it's your interest to learn them. I mean, they're outstanding lifts. They're so much fun.
Yeah.
When they're just so much fun. But if you don't kind of fit that bill, I agree. I think that's just personal decision. And please, for God's sake, get the proper training, because they're not going to be safe if you don't know how to do them right.
Yeah, and I will say, I've been in the last year and a half, I've been blown away by how well the clean is coached at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, and
mm-hmm.
The importance that's placed on it, to the point where athletes clean every single day of the week during mm-hmm. our 3-day programs. Obviously, yeah. They're not going. Many of our athletes, especially the high school or the 13, 14, 15 year olds, they're not cleaning 200 pounds 4 days a week. There's obviously.
Yeah. I mean, and exactly. Like, I mean, I was very fortunate at Rutgers to be able to train with national and international competitors mm-hmm. in Olympic weightlifting. So I'd like to say that I was able to kind of pick up a lot of things from guys that are moving some serious weight. But I was present for 190 kilo clean and jerk.
Nuts.
It was nuts. Yeah, it was nuts. The place went nuts. But at the time, that total would have made him third in the country, and that was someone that was a shot putter on the team, on the what do you call it, the track team. It was not someone that was on the Olympic team. They begged him. He was just an animal strength. It was incredible. But I agree with you completely. It just takes a very long time, and it's not just that it takes a long time to learn these lifts, but it also takes, it's slow in the beginning. You're not lifting weight. You know, you're practicing with an empty bar. You're practicing with a stick. You know, you're not really, you know, so it, unless your specific goal is to be an Olympic weightlifter, then what happens is for an athlete, that'll be their practice time, and they're still going to work on whatever skill, their strength, their speed, or whatever, while they're learning these lifts until eventually they can implement it into the full training program. And, you know, so you have to, just like you said, you have to be dedicated to that. You have to have that as a specific goal to enhance your training. So for someone that's not an athlete, again, I agree with you. I don't, you know, unless you specifically want to learn how to be an Olympic weightlifter, it's probably not worth the time.
Yeah. So before we get, you know, I don't need more hate mail. So if we're going to, you know, send more hate mail, send it somewhere else, because if it has anything to do with me saying that people shouldn't clean, I'm not going to open it. It's just going to get deleted. So
send it to me.
Send it to John. He,
yeah.
Send him a gift card too.
Right.
All right. So continuing on in terms of exercise selection, like we said, main lifts. And then this is, you know, and also a territory where we should talk about, you know, what if you can't bench, what if you can't squat? Mm-hmm. There's obviously a population out there who says that you shouldn't back squat. And you know what? We'll say specifically, you know, Mike Boyle is probably the person that is most well known for saying you should not back squat. And he just did a talk in February at the 2011 winter seminar, and it was the most convincing argument that he's ever given towards me. That is, in terms of, you know, it's single-legged work by itself is plenty. I still believe if you can back squat comfortably, it's not painful. You have good form. You have good coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still a great exercise. Again, you know, it's a completely different argument, and I wouldn't even say I disagree with Mike, especially because the population that you know is generally going to be worked with Mike and, you know, the staff at MBSC is lots of hockey players. And athletes, people that aren't looking for pure, you know, balls to the wall strength. These are, you know, people that we also want to, you know, health and injury prevention is a huge, component of what goes into the programming. And, I'm in complete agreement with how it's done at MBSC. You know, if I wasn't, I would say otherwise. You know, he wouldn't fire me for saying otherwise. So, the one thing I will say is, you know, take that for what you will. And if you can back squat, like I said, properly and comfortably, I would say do it until, you know, you start getting signs that you shouldn't be doing it, whether it be low back pain or, you know, knee issues or, you know, shoulder problems are going to be the main things that you're going to run into. But in terms of pure strength, and especially if you've been only doing this for a year or between 1 and 3 years, the back squat's going to give you a ton of bang for your buck. And you can also front squat if you know, need be. And I think the front squat is also a great exercise. John, what would you do if someone can't back squat, someone can't front squat? What would you do to still get that knee dominant exercise?
Yeah, I mean, just as real quick as an aside, I generally agree with Michael, though. I think that bilateral squatting is very important, especially for athletes that are cutting, because it's been shown to be more direct to a cutting activity. But I actually kind of
do that. Most people start with the back squat. I actually finish with the back squat. I take an athlete through a front squat. Once they can do that with good form and they have good, you know, you're working on shoulder mobility at the same time and core strength or whatever, I'll start to add in overhead squats. And once they're doing that comfortably, then I'll put them into a back squat. At that point, shoulder mobility is typically there. Their core strength will be there because I find that most people, you can cheat a back squat easily. You can use too much lumbar extension. You can dip forward too much. You can do a lot of things to cheat your back squat. So it's a lot harder to cheat a front squat and an overhead squat. There's just, it's really hard to do that. So I find that once they're comfortable in those exercises, then I have no problem giving a back squat at all. And some people may, you can give them a back squat on the first day and they're good. But generally speaking, I find it that they'll have, you know, core weakness, hamstring, you know, dominant hip extension with glute, you know, poor glute activity. Mm-hmm. And I find that front squats and then an overhead squat the first time you do an overhead squat, your back is going to feel like it's just locked up like crazy. It's just a great way to train your core in that complex movement. So what do you do if a person cannot squat? Well, I guess it boils down to why they can't squat. Is it a shoulder mobility thing? Then they can do something like a trap bar deadlift, which is a squatting motion, and it's a little bit more upright than a traditional deadlift, or dumbbell squats or something like that. I'd be very interested in single leg work at that point. If they just can't do a bilateral for some reason, most of the time people can't squat because of a back issue or because of a shoulder issue. So shoulder issues, they're not going to be able to get into a back squat, and they probably will have some difficulty even in a front squat. So again, I'm going to look at more single leg work while you're fixing the problem of the shoulder. If it's a back issue, then loading it all may be difficult if they're having pain like that. So again, single leg unilateral work, body weight work until their back is strong enough to be able to deal with weight. Interestingly enough, if someone does have back pain, depending on what it is, things like a front squat or an overhead squat can be helpful. If it's just a weakness issue and an issue of not being able to engage the core activity, but you have to evaluate each client or each patient for yourself. Some of these may be completely unrealistic, and other things, it's like take off the kid gloves. You can squat them. That just has to be, you know, lower weight kind of stuff. So it's all relative, but I think that if someone can't squat, my initial thoughts are then unilateral things.
Yeah, all great points, and you know, I'm not really gonna touch that because John did a great job with it, and I think you know, I don't know how to really address a lot of this stuff because I feel like we're gonna be talking for like 8 hours. So let's just deal with the main lifts, and mm-hmm. then we'll wrap up. Let's talk about the bench right now, and then we'll mm-hmm. wrap it up, and we'll save everything. We might have to make this like a 3-episode arc, or whatever like that. Maybe like a 2-season, 2-episode season finale, and then we'll keep people waiting for like a month for the next episode.
Right. Awesome.
So the, you know, in terms of the bench press, one note that I made in terms of when John was talking about the squat, again, depending on where you train, if you train at a really good facility where there's some kind of like a safety squat bar or GCB, mm-hmm. If it is shoulder issues, just that, you know, incredible external rotation that bothers you, when you're back squatting, obviously you can front squat or you can use a special bar, like a safety squat bar or GCB.
Yeah. That's right. That's a good point. People will also use, cause front squat, you need, you have two versions of the front squat, the so-called bodybuilder front squat and then the Olympic position squat. Mm-hmm. I personally prefer the Olympic position squat. I feel that you have more control over the bar, and therefore it's safer from that standpoint because you need to be able to control your weight. I know Eric likes the bodybuilder position because it's less stressful on the shoulders, and you're certainly going to not have to worry so much about mobility. And I agree with him completely. I just don't like that position. It's just not a comfortable squat. A good way around that, though, is I've seen plenty of guys – you can use like a straps
you know, that grip straps you just wrap around the bar, and then you actually hold onto the straps, so you're in a front squat position, but you don't necessarily need as much range of motion to get that. So sometimes that's a good way around a shoulder pain that's like a, you know, maybe you're developing some type of minor impingement and it's really positional related. It's not so much about moving the weight, it's about what position you're in when you move that weight. So those are some ways around that, and you made a good point there, Kev.
Yeah, and if people do have some time to burn at work this week, I just want to keep give you a quick heads up that I forgot to mention. The off topic is that there's a new Tron 3 teaser, a new Fast and the Furious trailer as well. So important stuff that you had to mention. So for the bench press, again, a lot of the times that we're a lot of things that people are going to run into are tend to be shoulder problems, obviously, when it comes to the bench. So, John, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I was losing you there for a second. But again, it kind of depends on where you train. But if you do have access to like a multi-purpose bar or a neutral grip bar, that's one way you can get around it. You know what? If you are having shoulder problems, maybe you shouldn't be barbell benching altogether. So just if you have to, just toss it out the window. It's not going to be the end of the world. Yeah. On Monday, you can just do a dumbbell bench instead of a barbell bench, and you will still be included with the rest of the group. And when it does come to that, you can still keep the rep range pretty low. You can still do 4 or 5 rep dumbbell bench and be pretty safe with it. Obviously, you're not going to do 1 rep max when it comes to dumbbell bench. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. And if you do have a decent strength level as a male, you're probably not going to have dumbbells that are going to even be heavy enough to do that. So I don't know what we really need to talk about in terms of the bench and in terms of exercise substitution, because it's pretty much going to be like a neutral grip dumbbell bench, or you're probably just going to be confined to doing push-ups for the time being.
Right. Yeah, and exactly. I mean, my personal feeling is that unless you are a power lifter or have some reason to be doing a bar bench, I don't tend to program bar benches. I just don't like the stress that it puts on the shoulder for that specific purpose. As long as there are other exercises that do a decent job of substitution, I prefer it that way. I mean, if that's the only way you could work your chest, I'd be like, all right, so be it. But if for someone that doesn't need to bar bench, I don't typically put in a bar bench. I much prefer dumbbell pressing. You're still going to get outstanding strength and hypertrophy and whatever from them, and they're much safer for the shoulder. So the other thing that is important is I'm a strong advocate of the power lifter position, where you have a scapular lock. That is also a much safer way to bench press than the standard old school bodybuilder bench press with the arms flared and the bars coming down to like mid chest. You're just putting way too much stress on the shoulder in a very not as strong position for the shoulder. So that bodybuilder powerlifter scap lock with leg drive. I think Mike Robertson actually wrote a really awesome article on that. I think a few years ago, but basically what you're doing is you're getting, if you're going to take it with a bar, you can do it with a bar, but you can also do it with a dumbbell. But what you do is you get yourself into position with that bar before it's unloaded, and you drive the leg so that you're shoving yourself up the bench. Your shoulders blades will therefore be depressed down, locked into position, and then you have your spotter take the bar for you, and you finish your leg drive as the bar is weighted on you, so that your shoulder blades are just locked in there. And it's a much more comfortable way to bench press, puts you in a better position for it. Someone that's actually a power lifter could give you a million more details for it, but that's the basic gist of it.
Cool. I completely agree, and we're running out of time, so we're going to leave it there for this week. But join us next week, where we're going to talk more about exercise selection. Then we're going to get into set and rep, and we're going to get into all the great stuff that you guys love, like percentages and total volume and deloading. It will be a a blast.
It's going to be just, yep, it's going to be.
Can you feel the electricity, John?
Dude, it's, we're ready to roll. It's going to be, it's just going to be a madhouse of crazy fun.
And then we're also going to have Lee Peel talking about supplementation and nutrition for strength as well. So, again, a little bit different than fat loss, obviously, and we're just going to have some fun. So I hope you had a great week, and you have a great week this week. You can check me out on Facebook.com/KevinLarrabee. You can add me as a friend and talk on there. I love virtual friends, and John is on Facebook someplace too. I don't know if he'll be friends with you, but
you know, I'm very selective. You have to send me a friend request. I'm very selective.
And you can also check me out on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. I post some fitness related stuff, and then also things that have to do with Stargate or video games. So that's it. Hope you have a great week. And until next week, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm Jonathan Fass.
We'll see you next week.
Word up.
Say hi to your mom for me, John.
I will.
Mrs. Fass.
Oh, dude. You know what?
All right, so we're here in the off-topic discussion for episode 208. I'm here along with John Fass, and we're going to keep it quick this week because we had a long one last week.
Not only are we going to keep it quick, we're going to keep it gully.
Yeah, you know, I'll talk about, because I had some, I've been kind of going back and forth with some people about this week, but I went to PAX East this weekend.
I was wondering, how was it?
Oh, it was really good. It was a lot of fun. Went with Roger Lawson, so.
Now, keep it real. Who hooked up?
Who what?
Hooked up.
Nobody
got
did.
Some numbers. Dude, I find it hard to believe that you went to PAX.
It's an interesting demographic. That, I mean, there's definitely women there. I think there was like 20% women there.
Oh, wow.
It was... And, like, a lot of them were hardcore. Like, some of them were dressed up like Princess Zelda and stuff. Like, they were...
That's dope.
And they were into
you
it.
You know, sort of.
I hope we're not...
You know what? 20% women is probably better odds than just about every guy in that room had ever seen before.
Yeah, no, I'll be serious. Like, there was definitely some dudes that looked like they, you know... didn't shower a lot, but for the most part, it was a pretty good crowd, and I even feel bad saying that because I know gamers get kind of like a bad rap. It's a stereotype, but no,
hey, man. What can you do?
I'm not recording this. Oh no, I am recording it. Okay, so the one thing there was booth babes there. This year, which is new, which I hate. I hate that so much, and I hate the guys that are going up to like chicks with fake boobs who are literally don't even know why they're there except to like stand there and look good. Because again, I think that's pandering to the demographic. It's like, oh my God, this girl's here. We're at the Lord of the Rings booth. But.
Whoa, can we? I'm not following your logic at all.
Internet problems, John?
Yeah, it's got to be. I thought you said that you don't like looking at beautiful women.
Well, the thing is, it's like not in that sense, because I feel like, you know, we're the reason why the developers or the publishers are doing that is to I don't know. Maybe I'm just being way too sensitive about it, and you know, way too righteous, but. I don't know. There were definitely some attractive women there who were just there to be there because they wanted to be there. But we were too busy running from like line to line, trying to play some stuff, seeing things are there. I got to play the new Mortal Kombat, a game
was
called
good?
Brink. Yeah, it was really good. There was actually a decent, there were some vendors there. So there was a decent, used game shop. That's local to here, and they had pretty good prices on their stuff. So I think I spent like $30 in some games, and nothing really, groundbreaking that happened there. I did post a bunch of photos on Twitter. If people want to check them out on my Twitter feed. And there's one of me on Facebook with me and a mech from Red Faction, the new Red Faction game, which also got to play, which if you played Red Faction Guerrilla, very much like that in terms of the destruction. I was kind of scared when I first saw the initial preview of the game where it was like all taking place underground, but you do go outside and you do get to blow up like huge towers, and I live in an old mill, so we have like huge smokestacks outside of our building. And just walking my dog yesterday, I'm like, oh my god, I wish I could throw some like mines onto those stacks and just blow them up and see them crumble, because that would look awesome. But scary thing, and that doesn't have to really do with the event itself, but I took my dog to daycare that day. And on the way back, I picked him up and, headed home. Roger and I headed back to my apartment. And the dog threw up in the back of my car. And initially, you got to keep in mind, it was raining that day. The dog was wet. And when the dog threw up, I'm like, that doesn't look anything like my dog's dog food. I think they gave him like a different kind of food. That's probably why he threw it up. So I didn't really think much of it. And then, get the dog, jumps out of the car. We walk into my building and I'm like, we're like walking by people. My dog jumps up on people. Like he's always like, trying to like say hello or whatever to people. And this dog wasn't jumping on people. So I'm like, oh my God, maybe it was just because it was raining and he was out in the rain. Maybe he's just tired. I don't know. So we get into my apartment and the dog starts like sniffing around. Like it's like, oh my God, all this new stuff. I got to sniff everything. And I didn't think much of it because my dog does that all the time when we're outside. He sniffs everything. Like every 2 feet, he has to stop and smell something. So I get a towel to dry him off. And then when I'm drying him off, I'm like, he doesn't have a penis. Where did his penis go? So upon further inspection, it was actually not my dog. So you got to keep in mind that this is at like 6:30 p.m. There's still rush hour traffic. The doggy daycare is about a half an hour away, without much traffic. So
How did you not know your own dog, man?
It was an identical black. They gave me the wrong dog. That was why. Like I didn't. They had the dogs downstairs. Like it's kind of in this big house. And they had the dogs downstairs, and you kind of pick them up upstairs. And they're like, oh, go get Marty. So they went and got Marty, and they, put his leash back on him and stuff like that. And I just kind of walked out, and the dog was wet. So I couldn't tell, the dog was a little bit skinnier than mine. And I'm just like, oh, it's probably just because the rain has all this, fur padded down.
Oh, my God. Did she respond to Marty? Like, would you call her?
Well, I didn't call her because it was on the leash. But I guess the dog responded to Marty when they got him.
Dude, you know what I think? I think that the real Marty was like, pushed her over. It's like, yo, man, take the fall. I don't want to go back with this guy.
No, my dog loves it here.
I think so, man.
No dog gets treated better than mine. No dog walks for an hour and a half a day and gets to, go to doggy daycare twice a week. I'm serious. So, that was that. So that was a little scary, and I got really freaked out about that. I'm like, oh my God, I picked up the wrong dog, and I'm racing back to get to the. Not to mention, the dog threw up like 4 pounds of vomit in the back of my car.
Which awesome.
Was awesome. It was great. Yeah.
I think Paris Hilton's dogs probably get treated better. They get carried around in like little Louis Vuitton bags or something. Do you carry your dog around in a Louis Vuitton bag?
No.
Well, then there you go. Paris Hilton has your beat.
The FitCast supplement will be online this week. I held it for a week because I didn't have time to edit it. Sorry.
Word.
So that was that, and I think that's really about it. And I've been watching old SNL on SNL post, you know, the season right after 9/11. I've been watching that on Netflix because it's really interesting to go back and watch how they address that.
That's interesting. How
the comedy, you know, how they kind of slowly mix it back in.
It was a weird time. And I remember, who was that, Letterman calling on and saying it's okay to laugh now or something. And it, like, it seems almost...
The mayor came on.
No, well, the mayor did, but it was the first, you know, nothing was on. Late night shows weren't on. I think they were, it was either Letterman. I thought it was Letterman was the first one back on. Maybe I was wrong.
It might have been. The other big, you know, thing that I remember seeing is Jon Stewart's, which, you know, like you watch it today, you will start tearing up.
Yeah, I mean, and it was amazing. And you know, now you look at it, it's like it's okay to laugh, but it made, I mean, I guess it still kind of makes sense, but it made so much sense. You know, it, like, everyone was just afraid to take a breath, you know. And I was, you know, I lived in North Jersey. I could see the city from where we were, you know what I mean? There was a cloud over the city for a month at least. And I still, to this day, if I drive down the turnpike, I look for the towers. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy. It's just unbelievable.
I mean, it's, I'm not saying, you know, you forget, but I literally forgot what that feeling was like to, you know,
that's pretty interesting though, actually. I mean, I think that exactly right. Like the, one of the biggest memories I have of that day was actually listening to Howard Stern when he was still on K-Rock, and because they were experiencing it with everybody else in the country, you know, and I was a big Stern listener, and it was just very interesting to hear their reactions live on the radio while you were sitting there thinking the same things, like you didn't know what was going on. And I remember that very, very clearly.
Well, the initial thought was that it was an accident. You know, the first plane, like, you know, the, you know, big, you know, accident, you know, for the first 20 minutes, and then the other plane hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was literally in study hall when the, you know, all the all the teachers got a phone call because, you know, you had phones in the classrooms, and all the teachers, like, you know, had that phone pick up, and, you know, you just started, everyone in the hall for, like, out of nowhere started walking towards the gym. And that's when the, you know, the principal told us what happened. And I was a freshman in high school at the time, and it was still, like, you know, unbelievable. Like, the first thing that I thought is, like, oh my God, we're going to war. Like, I thought it was... Yeah. You know, the start of World War III. And in some ways it kind of was, you know, on a much smaller scale, but, you know, it was crazy. But I really recommend, if you have Netflix, it's season 27. If you want to go back and, especially the Weekend Update stuff, it is really interesting to kind of, you know, reflect on the comedy that they did at that time. And you might even say they took it too far. I mean, there were definitely some jokes. I'm like, I can't believe it was 3 weeks post 9/11, or no, it must have been 7 weeks post 9/11, because I think they came back exactly 1 month or three weeks after the initial attack, because they were supposed to go do their first episode that weekend, the weekend of 9/11. And obviously they pushed it back, but, it's interesting, and it is still, you know, the comedy is still funny. It was some of their best stuff, especially with, Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon. Interesting.
That's pretty interesting. I think it is a great, it's kind of a great opportunity in a sense to revisit that, through, like, popular media and what was going on and things that are a little bit unusual, not just looking at the news reports or something, but like you said, like looking at something like a comedy show or whatever, and seeing how they were responding. I mean, it's just really interesting.
Yeah. So again, Netflix, it's really great. They have every season of SNL ever on there right now, including the current season. So for some reason, some people really don't like SNL. They think it's not as good as it used to be. But I've always dreamed, and you know, I always thought SNL was very magical in what it was in terms of you know, a New York institution. I hope to actually go and see a show within the next year or so. I think that's something I need to do, is take a trip to New York City for like a weekend, which I've never been, to enjoy it, enjoy the city. But that is definitely one thing I would love to do. But yeah, then no, that and the other big thing was the Drew Barrymore was going to come on right at the week of the Anthrax show. There was actually Anthrax in the building.
Oh yeah.
It's like, oh, it's crazy stuff. So, yeah, check it out. And I think that's where we're going to wrap it up. I guess I got some interesting feedback from last week, and hopefully you guys, some people thought it was good. Some people thought I should not talk about it, but you know what? Don't listen to the off topic then. You know, we're happy to give you fitness and nutrition information. This is for us. This is for John and I and Lee to talk to each other. And if you guys can enjoy it too, then that's awesome. And I think it's cool. But if, you know what?
There you have it.
There you have it. And Stargate is back. I watched the episode this week. It was pretty good.
Wow.